Colossians chapter 3. We're going to read this passage, and then we're also going to, just for a review, go back and read the 1 Peter chapter 5 passage, so you can be holding both of those there in your hands. Colossians 3, verse 20. Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing unto the Lord. And children, you've been going to need to pay attention today, because I just might call on you to give some valuable insight from your perspective on what is going on here. So maybe even read a passage or two, Lord willing. Then 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 5. Likewise, you younger, submit yourselves unto the elder. Yes, all of you be subject one to another and be clothed with humility, for God resists the proud and gives grace to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon him, for he cares for you. Be sober, be vigilant, for your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour, whom resist steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same afflictions are accomplished in your brethren that are in the world. And so we learned here in this passage, 1 Peter chapter 5, that verse 5 is actually referring to those who are younger in the faith. So we're not really talking about children here, but we are talking about something that is applicable to every person in a local New Testament church. You'll see that in verse 5. Yes, all of you be subject one to another and to be clothed with humility. And what we learned here is not only true for children, but it's true for us, and we need to recognize this, is that a unsubmissive believer in a local New Testament church, regardless of age, right? They could be in their 80s, they could be 2. But an unsubmissive believer in a local New Testament church, if they're not walking in submission, they are in rebellion, and the truth is that they are walking in what? What's the opposite of humility? Pride. Okay, and I think that's something that we as parents, we need to understand this. How dangerous is pride? Yeah, it's destructive, and one of the reasons we know it's destructive, not only for personal experience, but it was the downfall of what created being? Of Satan, of Lucifer. And he got self-focused, didn't he? Everything was centered around him. And that's what makes self so dangerous, and that's our default, isn't it? Okay, you get busy, you get in a hurry, you get non-thinking, you got things to do, and everything is about what you're doing. Okay, regardless, who cares about the other 6 billion people on the face of this planet? Okay, you got something you've got to do. So what happens when the red light turns red? You're in a hurry. What do you think happens? Okay, our sister over here just goes through it. Okay, that really wasn't what I was thinking, but that is one way to express frustration, is just to go through it. But on the other hand, I mean, you just sit there and stew. I've been there, you've been there. It's like, how dare this traffic light stop me? And, you know, the reality is, okay, and here you are, this has happened to me, it's happened to you. You're in a hurry and you get somebody that's going the speed limit. And the speed limit on this road is like 25. You never go 25, okay? You do fuss at people who break the speed limit, but not yourself, because you have a reason to. And you get behind this person, and they're obeying the law, right? And you're like, you know, you're looking on, I wish those lines weren't solid, you know. Should I break it? Is there any policeman around here? Anybody coming, you know? And then, you know, you decide, well, I'm going to pass them anyway. I mean, who in the world puts solid double lines on, you know, a mile-long straight path. You know, that's ridiculous. And so, you know, you have this frustration you take out and you get, and you just gun it to go by just to let them know that, that you're faster than they are. You know, when you go around them. And so there's this frustration that's there. But you know what? All that is rebellion against the Lord. Right? Is He sovereign? Okay. And it is an expression of pride in your own life. Okay. Because what you have to do is more important than that person in front of you. Right? Don't they know your schedule? Okay, that's how we get with it. And those things like that operate in our lives all the time. Okay. And parents, we need to understand that when our children walk in a settled manner, that this is an expression of their pride. And you get pride deep-seated in the heart of a person, they'll do things that they told you they'd never do. And so, God, look at verse 5 of 1 Peter 5. God resists what type of people? The proud. He stands face to face in opposition to them. God continually opposes the proud and gives grace to the humble. What New Testament church was especially accused of this sin? Which one was the one that Paul kept saying, "You're puffed up, you're puffed up, you're puffed up"? That's the church at Corinth. Were they under God's judgment as a lampstand of Jesus Christ? They were, and they were in danger of being destroyed. God was opposing them. Now, here's the interesting thing about it. People who walk this way have no idea that God is opposing them many times. The Corinthian church didn't, did they? Paul actually had to write them and tell them, you know, for this reason, because of your abuse of the Lord's table, some of you are sick and some of you are ill. Some of you have even what? Even died. They weren't even aware of it. They were just blaming it on the normal courses of life and going along. And so, that's the sad thing about it, is that when you have to approach a believer and you say, "Look, what you're doing is not right," they either argue with you or they look at you with astonishment. Who? Me? Not me. You know, humble people, they're usually the first people to say, "It's probably me." You know, so here are the disciples. And Jesus says to them, "One of you is going to betray me." What did the disciples say? What did Peter? He was the spokesman. They're like, "Is it me? Is it me?" And after a silence, Judas turns and says, "Lord, is it me?" And he knew it was him, didn't he? Okay, but he has to play along with the outward game so that people don't know what's exactly going on there. You don't want to see that in your children. And children, you're going to need to fight that. You're going to have a sinful nature inside of you, every one of you, that doesn't like that. When do you see that? Well, you see it when you get told to do something you don't what? You don't want to do. Okay, and that's true whether we're talking, you know, at conception, or if that's true no matter how we are. Do we ever outgrow that? No. In fact, in some ways, it seems to get worse the older you get. And so we want to make sure that we understand this. God opposes the proud. All right, but what if you clothe yourself in humility? Verse 5, God gives grace to who? To the humble. And let me tell you, you definitely want grace, don't you? And so we need to take care of this. So let's turn to Colossians 3. All
All right, Susanna, what is the main thing that children are to be working on?
Obeying their parents.
And of course, that extends into other areas of life also. So Colossians 3, verse 20. Walter, why don't you read that real loud?
Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing unto the Lord.
Okay, let's analyze this, Walter. You ready? Okay, so I'm going to ask you questions, and they're all in that verse. All right? Who is it addressed to?
Children.
How old are you to be a child? Boy, that's a hard question. Okay. Well, there is a sense that if your parents are alive, you'll always be a child, right? Okay, my relationship to my father and my mother, I'm still their what? Their child, and they're still my parents, even though there's a different form here. But I think, Walter, and I think this is what, you know, got him really thinking here, is that you're a child if you're still under your parents. Right? Because this is what you have here. Walter, look at this. You got verse 18. Who's it addressed to?
Why?
All right. That's not Walter. He didn't have one of those. Okay. Well, verse 19. Who's it addressed to?
Husbands.
Husbands. You're not one of those, are you? Okay. And in verse 20, he said it's addressed to children, so we're assuming you got husbands, wives, now you got a family, then there comes, Lord willing, children, so are you under your parents' roof? Okay, so if you're 25 and you're still living at home, what are you supposed to do? Obey your parents, all right? Takes a different relationship when a man leaves his father and mother and cleaves to his wife and forms a new family. Okay? But I would say in general, but I think definitely we could say that if you're under the age of 18, you're probably still considered a what? A child. Okay. So what we know, Walter, are you ready for this? We're not through asking her questions, so you're not out of this yet. What we know is this, is that the obligation to obey our parents is an obligation that extends for many years. Okay. Now, the world says you're mature at age 12. You know, at 12, you're able to make all your decisions so that your parents aren't your parents. Now they're your buddies. Okay. A buddy is somebody that I share my thoughts with and, you know, we can go back and forth and, you know, batter about it, argue about it, debate about it, see who comes out ahead. But that's not my relationship with my mom and dad. Right? Okay, it's a different type of thing. All right, Walter, you ready? Okay. Who are you to obey?
Okay.
Did you notice that Walter was extremely correct? He said his parents. So that means Walter has a particular set of parents. Right? Do you know where they're at today?
Yep.
Okay, where are they? Okay, that's pretty good. Dad just recognized. He actually said publicly that he was your parent. Mom didn't budge, so we'll worry about her later, okay? So here's his parents. Okay, now sometimes in a church, a child's parents aren't there. Okay, and so here we have his parents. Okay, now, Walter, you told me already, Susanna told me obeying is the primary thing that you're to work on. And you said you're supposed to obey who? Your parents. Okay, and in how many things? Okay, is that in the verse?
Yes.
Okay, good. All right, you're to do this in all things. Now, what does that mean, Walter, if your parents ask you to do something that is against the Scripture? I mean, all things means what? Okay, is that all things without exception? So if your dad, what would be something unscriptural? Your dad wouldn't ask you to do this, but a person could ask you to do. Okay, we'll say rob a bank. We all agree robbing a bank's bad. Okay, so let's say dad comes up and says, Walter, you know, let's have a talk. Okay, we're sitting here in front of the bank, you know, BB&T, and I want you to go in there and hold it up. Take the money. You think that ever happens?
Yeah,
that does happen. Okay, a father-son team, probably older than Walter. Okay. All right, so what are you going to do there? Shoot your dad? Okay. Okay, what are you going to do? Walter said he wasn't going to do it. Is he violating this verse? Are you violating this verse? It says, obey your parents in all things. How do you know you're not violating the verse? Okay, right. So there is exception to this in that who are you to obey first of all? Christ. Everybody see that? And Ephesians says that. Okay? So Walter's ready for this class to be over. Okay, so but those are the kind of questions you have to ask, right? It does say all things. So if you just take that verse, and I've had people do this. I've had wives do this, okay, and others, all right? So, Walter, you've got children obeying your parents, your own personal set of parents, in how many things? All things, but we understand that there's an exception. Now, why should you do this? What does that mean? It pleases him. I know this isn't technical, but it makes God happy. Okay? And I think, parents, can we say this? It is a profitable thing to make God happy. Okay, that is a good thing there in the Lord. So let's just look at this. Walter, we're done with the grilling. Doesn't mean I won't come back to you now, so gotta stay awake. All right, so children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. So, here's one of the things I want to bring out here. Our children are to obey both of their parents. Okay, everybody see that? Okay, now the reason why I bring that up is because a child's relationship, just like in our relationships with people, can have mixed favoritism. Like a child could like his mom over his dad. A daughter could like dad over mom. I mean, mom comes down on her. Dad, she's got wrapped around her finger. Okay? And so, you know, I'm going to be more communicative, more willing to listen to my dad versus what my mom says. My mom doesn't tell me to do things in a nice way. Dad's always kind. He's always nice. He's always good. You know, these types of reactions go on in people's lives. Is that correct? Okay. And children, I just want you to know that regardless of the different mood that your parents are in, you are to obey both of them. So that means you need to make both of them happy in the Lord. Okay, so what if we're talking about something that is arbitrary? Let's pick something arbitrary. Let's pick something we probably don't want to talk about. Okay, we ready? Susanna, you ready for this? Okay, let's talk about cleaning our room. Okay, we could talk about cleaning the house or whatever, but let's talk about cleaning our room. Children should clean their room. How many of us agree? Okay, all the parents raise their hand. Okay, now, if I had a meeting with all the parents, let's say I got all the mothers in a room. True or false? All the mothers would agree to the same standard of cleanliness.
No way.
No way. Right? So, So there is an element of, you know, what's a good word? I'm going to use the word arbitrary, but there is an element in which a parent may have a different level of cleanliness. Let me ask you another question. True or false? A husband and a wife might have different levels of cleanliness. Okay. That was true in my home. Okay. Mom was pretty strict, but boy, if Dad ever got the white glove out, I mean, you know, you had to have like hospital sanitation going on. Okay. So in a home, could Dad have a higher standard of cleanliness than Mom? Okay, so who does the child want to obey? No, they don't want to obey both. They only want to obey Mom. Okay, because her level of cleanliness is down here. And what they'll say is, yeah, but Mom said it was okay. So then you're pitting Mom's level of cleanliness against Dad's level of cleanliness. That does happen, by the way. And so what we know is this. You can have different levels on. I don't have any Bible verses that tell me the level of cleanliness that you ought to have in your room. Okay? I think we all could agree on some bottom line. Okay? But that's pretty arbitrary. Do children have a level of cleanliness that they think is clean? I've actually brought a child in a room. There's toys all over the floor. Things are scattered everywhere. Clothes are everywhere. And I'll say, what do you think? Is this room clean? And my kids will go, oh, yeah. I know exactly where the toys are at. They're all at my feet. I know where my clothes are at. I just threw them in the closet. We had one of our kids. We would iron, press, and have all this little neat stuff ready to go. And all you had to do was put it in the drawer. And we didn't know this would happen. They'd just go up, open their closet, and go, and it didn't matter how much discipline, it didn't matter if you had verbal instruction or punitive discipline, they just wouldn't do it. We actually had to pray about it. Can you imagine taking time in a prayer time to say, Lord, please change my child's heart so they won't throw the clothes in the closet and then I won't have to give them discipline? That was my youngest, by the way. And eventually one day, it must have just like a light bulb went off in their heads. And my son's like, you know, that's probably not the best thing to do. He doesn't do that anymore. At least I don't think so. So what we have here is an obedience. So if Mom has a level of cleanliness, Dad has a level of cleanliness, how should you clean your room, children? Susanna, here, this is a hard question. How should you clean your room? Should you meet your standard, Mom's standard, or Dad's? This is a hard one. Okay, well, you can't do that because Mom's standard is lower than Dad's. Okay, so let's ask, should it be your standard? No. Okay, we got that down. Parents are happy about that. Okay, Dad, what do you think?
Whoever asks you,
you're going to do. Okay, I think the scriptural answer would be you'd want to take the highest standard. Right? Well, think about it. If I meet my dad's standard, do I meet Mom's? What do you think, Susanna? If Mom's standard's here, Dad's standard's here, your standard's here. Okay, so if I meet Dad's, do I meet yours? Yes. Do I meet Mom's? Do I make my dad happy too? There you go. Because you're to obey both. Both of them are to be well pleased. Okay, so, and I understand there's all kinds of exceptions and, you know, you're hurrying out the door and all that type of thing. But you want to be well pleasing. To how many of your parents? Both. So if I just make my mother happy, but I don't make my dad happy, am I being fully obedient? No. So, Susanna, you can pray Mom and Dad have always have the same level of everything. Okay?
Does everybody see that? Okay? We take the high road. We take the high road with everything. And so we are to have that. Secondly, not only are we to obey both parents, but your parents, I may mention this, will be your parents all the days of your life. Okay? And they're not your friends. Now, should a parent be friendly? Yeah. Could they act as a friend, meaning they listen to you, you can talk to them about anything, doesn't matter what it is, how silly it is, you could talk to them. Do they need to do that? That's an aspect of parenting. But they're not your friends. And I don't know if that's a real danger today. I know when in my generation, that was a real danger. We didn't want my parent to be a parent. We wanted him or her to be my bosom buddy. And then because the parents didn't like getting older, they tried to live their life again by being 18, you know, to try to be friends with their kids. You are not your children's friends. You are your children's parents. Is there a difference? There is a difference. And sometimes children will say that. They'll say, well, you're supposed to be my friend. You know, and usually I'll respond by saying, yes, I certainly am, but I am your parent first. You don't have the same obligation to my friend. It doesn't say obey your friends in all things. Sometimes in a church, just going in a church thing, sometimes they want the pastor to be my friend and not a pastor. Does that happen? Okay, now should I be friendly? Should you be able to talk to me about anything? And but at the end of the day, I'm a what? I'm a pastor. I'm a shepherd. I'm here to give you God's words about certain things. And sometimes pastors get caught up in that. They want to be everybody's friend. And that doesn't work. Okay. And so we need to understand that. Our parents deserve the honor that is theirs all the days of their lives. So even though I'm out of the home, my relationship to my parents are different. I have my own home, my own walk with the Lord. But is my dad still my dad? Okay, what if he gets to the place where his dementia or Alzheimer's, he doesn't have either one that I'm aware of, but his Alzheimer's is so bad he doesn't know who you are. Is he still your parent? Are you not sure? He is still your parent. Okay, now you might have to do some parenting things in that arena, but you are still to give honor to your parents, whether they're conscious or unconscious, because the Lord is looking on you. You're doing this unto the Lord. Thirdly, let's think about this. Children, think about this. Every child is brought into the world under authority. Let's just stop and think about it. What authorities do you have when you get brought into the world? Let's everybody think about this. Any responses? Okay, you got a mother, right? Okay, she's the one that has bore you, carried you, fed you, nourished you. That's an authority, isn't it? Okay, what else? Okay, you got a doctor? Okay, the old saying goes, the baby comes out, and the first thing your authority does is spank you. Welcome to this life. Whack. Okay. I don't know if they always do that now, but in any case, they wanted to hear the baby what? Wanted to hear the baby breathe, cry. Okay.
But is the doctor an authority? Is he in control of the child? Okay. You've got nurses that are there, don't you? Okay. The child doesn't come into this world without authority. Okay. Even if it's only a mother, there's a relationship of authority there. And I hate to tell you this, but we're not going to go out of this world without authority. Okay, even if I'm in a hospital bed and I'm unconscious and I'm dying, am I under authority? Yeah, because you know you don't get out of the hospital until they say okay. And so a child comes into this world under authority. And this parallels the creation. When God created all things and declared all things good, who was the authority? God was. Who were the angels to obey? The sun, the moon, the waters, the earth, the vegetation. It was all created and came into existence under authority. Does everybody see that? And our children come into the world paralleling that same thing. So therefore, it means that children, that your parents have the privilege of being the instrument that God uses in your physical development, meaning they feed you, and your spiritual development. Parents, what a blessing it is to be reflective of the Lord and see your children get born again. Isn't that a blessing? Or to see grace operating in their lives. Okay. It's even a blessing to see them grow up. Okay. I don't know about you, but we used to have these height things, you know, and we'd put the kid next to the wall, you know, and say, put your heels next to, and we'd put a little mark there, and it's like, oh, you grew. Everybody's like, yay! Okay? We didn't have anything to do with it other than feeding them. Okay? But we're excited about that, right? You want to see physical development, and as believers, you want to see spiritual development go on in your children. And so we have, parents, you have that responsibility to be reflecting the concerns of the Lord in the lives of your children. So therefore, since every child is brought into this world under authority, then his first relationship in which he is to be submissive under is in the home. Right? It's in the home. Fourthly, this obedience that is spoken of in Colossians chapter 3 and verse 20 is an obedience that is a reflection of the new man. Go back up in that chapter, Colossians 3 and verse 9. Speaking to the church and the individual members, it says, lie not one to another, seeing that you have put off the old man with his deeds, and have put on the new man, which is renewed in knowledge after the image of him that created him. Verse 12. Put on, therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, bowels of mercies, kindness, humbleness of mind, meekness, long-suffering. Verse 14. Above all things, put on charity. Verse 15. Let the peace of God rule in your hearts. And then he goes into the relationships that are there, verse 18. So those relationships are an expression of the new man. So this is especially binding on those that are believing people. So this extends to every area of your life. So let's take another example. All right, Susanna, you ready? You ready? Clean room. Susanna, do you think that Dad could make a scriptural argument that you should clean your room? Okay. I think so, don't you? Is God orderly? God is orderly, isn't he? Okay. So Dad could make that instruction to you and say, clean your room. And if you turn to Dad in a right spirit and said, Dad, where in the Bible does it say this? Dad could give you some verses. You can't find a verse, thou shalt clean your room. Okay, but he could give you some verses to instruct you on why you should do that. Everybody agree? Okay. But as we've mentioned before, how clean is clean? So if Dad says, this is what I want this here, that here, toys over here, closet, I don't want you hiding things under your bed. Okay, go through all that. And then you said to Dad, Susanna, well, why do I have to do it this way? Is that a question that could come up? Okay, now could Dad give you a scriptural reason why the toys go in the toy box? What do you think? Well, it'd be a lot harder to come up with a verse for that, wouldn't it, Susanna? Okay, it'd be a lot harder to do that. You probably could argue for one, but you'd have to be a pretty mature believer to kind of go along with that. Okay. Now, the point I'm making is this. Sometimes our children, especially when they get older, they want a Bible verse for everything. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Well, it's a good thing in general. Okay, because they want to know, because they're formulating their own convictions, and they want to know why you do the things that you do. But parents, we all know this. We all know that there are probably hundreds of things that we set certain standards at that we could not give a specific, what? A verse for. But children, should you still obey? Suzanne's nodding her head, yes. They should still obey. In other words, we obey even when there is clear scriptural instruction, and we obey even if it's questionable. Because we are giving them due weight to their position. Now, I remember years ago, it got down to a place one time, do you know the why game? Why do I have to clean my room? Give me a reason. I'm sorry? No, not yet. Not yet. We can't go there yet. Why do I clean my room? Okay? Because God is an orderly God. We all agree with that? Okay, you give them something scriptural. Then they say, well, why is God an orderly God? So how would you answer that one? Well, that's his nature. Is that his nature? Okay, that's who he is eternally. Well, why is that? Okay, now let me give you a clue, parents, if you're not already clued in. They don't really want to know why. Okay, they're playing the why game because eventually you can't what? You can't answer it. All right, Brother Bob, tell me what the bottom line is real loud. What's the bottom? You're to do this because I said so. And then they look at you like you just violated the scripture. Okay. Does that ever happen with adults? Adults do the same thing. We're very childish in our approach to things. So, both in my parents' clear instruction and in the areas that my parents may have questionable things that I may agree or not agree with, am I to obey them if I can do that? As a child, the answer is what? Yes. Okay. For instance, this is really a nothing, but it used to grate on me when I was a child. My dad bought really nice furniture. And my dad made a rule in my house. You ready for this rule? The rule was that you could not sit on the couch in shorts. And the reason was is your bodily fluids would get on the couch and it would wear it out faster. Okay, so my dad said, you're not to do this, so when you sit on the couch, you have to put a towel underneath you, if you got on shorts. Okay, if you had on long pants, you're good, unless they were dirty. Okay, but other than that, I mean, you had to physically get up, go into a closet, get an old towel, put it down on the thing, sit on it, and not budge off of it. You know, a little narrow. What do you think about that? Okay, well, I never had that rule in my home. Did I ever have that rule? Okay, just making sure here. But you know, today, if I decided to wear shorts in my dad's house, do you know what I'd do? What would I do, Susanna? I would go get a towel. I would sit on the towel. My dad had a rule, you couldn't go on the carpet with shoes on. I don't care how clean your shoes were, period. So you know, if you're going in and out of the house, like taking trash out, going back in, you go into the bathroom, grab the stuff, no shoes. Then you get on linoleum, then you had to put your shoes on. Because you couldn't go outside barefoot. That was mom's rule. So then you go outside, empty trash, come back in. Now you got to put the trash can up. What do? You take your shoes off, go get the trash. Okay. After a while, you learn just to consolidate all the trash in one trip. Okay. But could that get weary?
Yeah.
Could you get upset about that? Okay. But there's no sin in that. So nod our head, yes. There's no sin in that. You may not like it. You may not agree with it. But there's no sin in it. So you know what I do when I go to my dad's house today? He has a little area here where you go in the front door and take your shoes off. Now, if you're in Canada, that's cultural. Take your shoes. If you ever go to Canada, you take your shoes off before you go in the house. That's cultural. But I go in, take my shoes off. So, you know what we do when we do luggage? My wife takes some luggage in, then she takes off her shoes, and then I bring the luggage and put it inside the house, and then she takes it back into the house so that she doesn't have to put her shoes back on. That's extra work, isn't it? Okay, but that's the rule. Okay. And so I just use that, and my dad has absolute right to make that rule. What kind of spirit should I have about it, Walter? What kind of spirit? Yeah, it should be my joy to do that, because it makes my dad happy. Amen? Okay. And so that's what we're talking about here. So, and then children, you need to understand that sometimes the things that your parents ask you to do might bring you embarrassment. Is that right, Mom and Dad? Let's jump out of here just a second. Does Christ ever ask us to do something that brings us embarrassment and shame? We all nod our head yes. Okay, that means that our parents may give us a command that may bring us personal reproach, personal embarrassment, personal shame. It's not a sinful requirement, but you know, you're going to be laughed at by your friends because of that requirement that your overbearing parents have for you. So you know, going back to my dad's illustration about the towel. If I shared that with my friends when I was 12, what do you think my friends would say? In their supreme maturity and wisdom, what would they say? They'd laugh. They'd... Yeah, there you go. Let's just be forthright. That's dumb. That's dumb. I can't believe that is just dumb. And you're sitting there saying, yeah, I agree. You get a bad spirit about it. And then you got, you know, 10 kids that are on your side. Okay, but he does have reason for what he's doing. It's not an arbitrary type thing. Does everybody see that? This is real life, isn't it? trusted. This goes on here in our home. And so, children, what you need to make sure when it comes to obeying is you need to be careful about facial expressions of rebellion. All right, parents, we all know about this, right? Somebody asks you to do something and you go, okay. What did you just communicate? You just let the person know they're not happy that you're obeying them. You just express to them, I just want you to know I'm going to do what you said, but it's under duress. Because I don't like it. Then you say, well, are you okay with this? Sure.
Yep.
Well, why'd you do, you know, screw your face like that? I didn't screw my face like that. You can't play it back. You don't have it on iPhone video. God does. Okay, our faces betray us, don't we? Okay, the first reactions there that are going on. So children, you need to watch out for that. You need to guard your heart that you don't have these facial expressions of rebellion. Secondly, here's an act of disobedience. It's pointing out your parents' sins to justify your bad spirit. You have a bad spirit, and you say, yeah, but, you know, you do this. I don't know why my kids always thought that they get to do what I do. I mean, I'm 45 years old, I'm 55 years old, I'm 35 years old, and they think because I get to stay up, they what? You know, and they're 8. Okay. And so, this is the way our sinful nature is. The other thing that children can do that's rebellious is they'll point out their parents' inconsistencies to justify their bad spirit. Now, grandparents, I know you've seen this. Have you ever heard this? If you have more than one child, you've heard this. The Hoffins are going to hear this if they haven't heard this already. Yeah, but you don't treat my brother that way. You don't treat my sister that way. Try to explain to a 12-year-old why you have differing standards for different children. You're inconsistent. You should be consistent. You should be fair. What you do for them, you ought to do for me. Grandparents, you ever hear any of that from your kids? My kids say to me that. They say, we counted the number of times each brother got spanked. And we've come to the conclusion, this is scientific evidence, that the oldest got spanked way more than the second. And the second got spanked way, way, way more. And both of the two, oldest, agree that both of them got spanked tremendously more than Timothy ever did. Right? Scientifically, they've been counting. They have a little Geiger counter. And they've been doing this since age 4. Click, click. And you know what's so bad about this, parents, is we believe them. We sit there and say, oh, I'm so sorry. I was a terrible parent. You know, come here, Timothy. I need to give you 50,000 more spankings so that we can match up with the ones I gave to the other ones. That's ridiculous, isn't it? But that's the type of argumentation we have. We have that in the church, by the way. People say, well, you're always picking on me, but, you know, so-and-so sits over here. I never see you talking to them. I never see you instructing them. We're a bunch of kids, aren't we? The other thing is being argumentative. Children ever get argumentative? Now, there is a way to say, you know, to ask for explanation that isn't a bad spirit, but just having a contrary argumentative spirit, usually that's associated with anger, right? You're angry about this, and so you're trying to get your way. The other thing is, I got two more and we'll be done. The obvious one is just outright rebellion. Okay, you hope your children never get to that place. They're not going to obey you regardless of what you say. And many parents get brought to that position. But here's the last one. I think it's number 6 on acts of disobedience. And that is to have outward obedience but no love in your heart. In other words, you're just doing it to be doing it. Years ago, I heard some of this from, you know, a youth group here. And what they said was something like this: I just can't wait to get out from under my parents' house. I'm just acting good until I get out on my own, and then I'm never coming back here or the church or any of that. That was all a front, wasn't it? Okay. Now let me just say this, children. If that's your front, you're not being obedient. Even if outwardly you're cleaning your room, meeting the requirements that are there. So Lord willing, next Lord's Day, we'll look at Ephesians and we'll be done with this. I'm sure we'll get it a little bit into discipline, because pretty much have exhausted the subject for what I want to do here. But this is reality. Amen. This is where we're at. And parents, you need to be aware of this. And you also need to be on the watch care, parents, that you don't do this in your own life. Let's pray together.